Shell may be abandoning their plans for drilling in Alaska's Arctic waters in 2014, but vessel traffic, tourism, and other activity will continue to advance. As part of our ongoing look at future plans for port development and military oversight of Arctic safety and security, I recently spoke with Dr. Daniel Chu, the Undersecretary for Strategy at the Department of Defense. Chu says the Pentagon expects large increases in defense activity is likely decades out. But he says DOD is closely following climate science to ensure they have the lead time to adjust if necessary.
So we are doing that, and we're doing that through a process that we have internal to the Department of Defense that generates, for example, our requirements and our budgetary outlooks. And we're doing that in close conjunction in this case with Northern Command. They have been named the Arctic Capability Advocate. They will be the lead in determining, as conditions change, should we need to change the way we plan for the Arctic.
There's, as you're well aware, there's a lot of political jockeying going on regarding Arctic resources right now. Canada is building up their Arctic military. Russia and Canada are staking overlapping claims in the Arctic. How do you see this unfolding over the next decade? And what is the U.S. military's role in ensuring there's no escalation of tensions over territory and sovereignty?
On the capabilities piece, Canada, of course, is paying a lot of attention to the Arctic, and we understand that. But as I understand it, they are also thinking very hard about how to invest those resources over time. And I think they would, as we do, try to tie that as much to conditions as possible. And by that, I don't just mean environmental conditions. I do mean the conditions that you are alluding to about the competing claims, the political military, so to speak, conditions in the region. So in the meantime, we do think it's absolutely critical to manage the resolution of any competing claims in the Arctic. These are largely not defense issues. This is largely about using existing mechanisms to resolve these disputes. They are in place, and to a large extent, those with competing claims are adherents to those processes, and we strongly encourage that.
Conditions are changing rapidly in the Arctic, and there's growing mm-hmm. international interest.
Mm-hmm.
It takes at least a decade, if Congress gave the green light today for funding for icebreakers, for an Arctic port, we're still at least a decade away from having that work done. Security is in a large degree unmonitored in this region. How concerning is that?
So 2 points that are important. One is the lead time, and we're very cognizant of that, both because of the types of capabilities we're talking about. For example, I know a lot of folks are focused on the icebreaker question, or because of the nature of the environment there. Building infrastructure, for example, in an Arctic environment takes much longer, much more difficult than almost any other environment. You're absolutely correct to say that there's a long lead time. But do we absolutely have to monitor the security situation there as well? Yes. We do. Again, this crosses both political, military, diplomatic, and, you know, kind of the hard security realms. We do have to pay attention to that. I think we have historically, and I think we will continually, but we are also really emphasizing, and the point of this strategy really is to highlight our opportunity at this point to not just monitor and react, but really to be involved in shaping the outcome of this in a proactive manner so that we can, again, ideally preserve the more cooperative angles, aspects of our interactions in the Arctic and make that the predominant theme going forward.
Dr. Chu, what should Alaskans expect to see in a military presence in the next 5 to 10 years? How will the Department of Defense sort of ramp up to address traffic, territory, and security concerns in the Arctic?
So currently, certainly in the next 5 years or so, I don't anticipate any major changes in presence. As I said, from a security standpoint, we don't see major threats in the region in this particular time frame that necessitate changes in military presence. On the safety piece, in particular on environmental safety and human safety issues, we certainly will ensure that we are able to support our colleagues in the Coast Guard, for example. I would really caution you and listeners to remember to put this in perspective. Although we do see a lot of additional activity, everything from tourism to intra-regional commerce and exploration, we do have to put that in context. Certainly more people, but this is not yet kind of a vast opening of the Arctic.
We've heard a lot about the U.S. failure to sign onto the Law of the Sea Treaty. Does this impact the strategy militarily to not have the U.S. be a part of this treaty?
On the one hand, no. At an operational level, to be honest, we continue to operate and collaborate consistent with the norms laid out in the Law of the Sea Treaty on a day-to-day basis. That said, at a broader political level, and I'll defer to my colleagues in the State Department on this, the one concern I have about not being a part of the structure associated with the Law of the Sea Treaty is that there will be a lot of forums and discussions which we may not be able to participate in as effectively as we would like to if we are not signatories.
Daniel Chu is the Undersecretary for Defense Strategy at the Pentagon. A transcript of the full interview is online, alaskapublic.org.